The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Coming up on Columbia Calling with me, your host Richard McCall, here in Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, we'll be talking to journalist Jessica Weiss. Jessica will be telling us about the internally displaced people in Colombia and the problem that this is creating and the stress on the state. Of course, these are people displaced by the violence in Colombia, something about which you may not know, but it's a terrible situation in Colombia. So this week we'll be talking to Jessica Weiss, an excellent interview on internally displaced people in Colombia and her project as a journalist on this topic. So stay tuned for Columbia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall. Get in touch, columbiacalling@gmail.com. Check out our website, columbiacallingradio.com, coming up soon.
You're tuned in to overseasradio.com, your online radio resource about life abroad.
If you're concerned about leaving your financial fate in the hands of cash-strapped governments, or if you're alarmed by the plethora of new laws, taxes, and regulations that have recently passed, or in the works that pose a real threat to your future's prosperity, or perhaps you simply just want to know the options you have to live, work, play, retire, and investing anywhere in the world. My name is Domingo Silva, CEO of EscapeArts.com, the premier trusted authority on international living for the past 19 years. If you're looking for a way to make life-changing decisions without spending a large chunk of your money and time to start your own research, then look no further than the Escape Artist Passport Program. This is a membership program that gives you access to information that you're seeking and the connections to the experts that can provide you the information. And the best part? You can begin right away to implement these practical and easy strategies without ever leaving your home. Learn more by going to overseasradio.com and click on the Passport banner. You'll be glad you did.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
It's that time of the week again, folks. Yes, it's Columbia Calling. We're here in Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And like every week, we're here. We've got a special guest on the show. This week's special guest is a journalist from Washington, D.C., Jessica Weiss. Who's really, you know, made a name for herself in the field of journalism and is embarking on some very special, very interesting, very timely projects here in Colombia. She moved down to Colombia, I guess, a few months ago. She'd previously based in Argentina. Interestingly enough, through the Facebook connections of this world, we have a friend in common who I studied with back in London, Natasha Tyne, so a Jordanian journalist. Listen, how small the world is today, but we're now here in Bogota, overlooking the Septima, my dog in the background. He's probably going to come up and interrupt this interview at some point, but then, to be prepared. Anyway, we're here with Jessica Weiss. Jessica, welcome on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This is an honor.
The flattery will get you everywhere. But anyway, so really what we want to talk about, we're going to give a little bit of your background. You did a master's at Georgetown in journalism. You write for the New York Times and various other outlets. I know that you were an employee of the International Center for Journalists out of Washington, D.C. So you've got a pretty weighty resume here. And what brought you to Colombia?
Well, I was living in Argentina, living, learning, working. It was my first foray into international correspondence and being a freelance journalist. And I have to say, I did move to Colombia for love. I met a man who was traveling, who's Colombian. And when he mentioned wanting to move back to Bogota, I was very interested, curious. There's so much energy coming out of Colombia. I'd been eager to visit for a long time prior. And so I sort of decided I'd already taken the leap from Washington to the southern cone, to Argentina. Why not take another leap into a place that's very promising for a journalist?
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that, because when I moved here full-time in 2007, I'd never had any trouble ever, you know, sort of getting journalist gigs and stuff. Unfortunately, it was all the wrong stuff, you know, the bombs and the kidnapping. Now, of course, I have to be a bit more creative. There's more of us out here, not just the same old names reporting the same old stories. There's more of us. But I mean, it's noted in your writing. I mean, you did a very big piece, very well-received piece on the World Cup here in Colombia and the sticker album phenomenon. No? As I, how was that to research?
Gosh, that was probably one of the, I'd say that was the most fun I may have had reporting a story that I can remember. You know, I'm interested in stories about people, stories about things that are off the beaten path. I think it is really important to report on those things you mentioned, bombs and conflict. But what about the people behind, you know, all of these stories that are on the streets, that are you know, they're just living their lives, and that's sort of what interests me the most. So when I heard about this trend to collect and trade stickers for the World Cup sticker albums, I just found it fascinating. Not just kids doing this here; that this is adults, you know, and men, women, people of every color and faith, and you know, everybody out mingling on the streets trading these stickers. And I just thought, what a great story that's different from something that you might normally hear in Colombia. So I pursued it, and turned out when I started digging into it, it was even better than I could have expected.
And I mean, it was great. You know, I collected stickers, and I, you know, I'm a Brit. I'm a football fan. I like all this stuff. I'm going to talk about my nation's performance in the World Cup. Let's say Colombia were amazing, obviously, but yeah. And Costa Rica, which I liked immensely too. But you know, it's adults out there and grandparents going on behalf of their grandchildren. I mean, it was it was kind of like a ciclovia, but in stickers. You know, there was no social barrier, which is unusual in Colombia.
Yeah, so, I interviewed a woman and her son who had created this WhatsApp sort of communication where if she managed to find stickers that he needed at work, she would WhatsApp him during the day so that he wouldn't search for those same stickers at school. So, I mean, people were really getting into it and just really creative. And yeah, that's what drew me to the story.
And how did your editors in New York react to it? Were they happy?
Oh, they loved it. They thought it was, I mean, it's entertaining. It's It can even be funny for people who, you know, they have memories, I think, in the U.S. of collecting baseball cards when they're kids.
Yeah.
But this is not something that I think people in the U.S. associate with as doing as adults, so it was really entertaining and exciting for them.
And not an ordinary story for a U.S. market either. I mean, football, soccer is growing immensely, it's true, and the MLS is actually, you know, coming of a standard that's enjoyable to watch, but I would think that the sticker album collection, let's say, if in New York, would be sort of left to Flushing and places, or you know, up in Queens where the Colombian diaspora will live, and but not sort of downtown Manhattan. You wouldn't see that. So you're opening, let's say, you know, the eyes of the regular New Yorker to another community.
I mean, totally, and something that, you know, I love those stories where, you know, I'm able to get into an experience that I never would have ever known about being where I'm from, or people in New York would never have ever imagined something like this. And that to me is the ultimate, you know, opportunity to sort of dig into this subculture for people that might find it weird.
I mean, a subculture there that is here mainstream. As mainstream
absolutely,
as it comes. But fantastic. I mean, it was a really nice article about it. And if you want to look it up, just look up the New York Times. And I guess you put in Columbia World Cup or Jessica Weiss in the search box. And then
stickers.
I'm sure there's not too many other pieces on stickers. So you can find that article. And it's a real pleasure to read that kind of thing, because it's something very different about Colombia. Mm-hmm. It's something, you know, we get a lot of stories about Colombia out there, but this is something very different. Now, We have you on the show for a different, you know, there's a different story out there. There's a different project that you're working on. And I believe it's a crowdfunding project over mm-hmm. what is called the Beacon Reader. Now, I know of the Beacon Reader because I've researched before this piece. But we're going to take a short break before we delve back into this in the second segment of the show. But for those of you out there who are writers or interested in reading great writing that perhaps doesn't make it into the mainstream press, there's a whole lot of crowdfunding options out there. Beacon Reader, Contributoria, I think Kickstarter is starting a new one. But, you know, to permit writers who would perhaps be, given the cold shoulder or not the opportunity maybe in the mainstream press to get their stories across. And as a freelance journalist, it's more than 10 years in the business, I well know this. I find myself really looking at these new crowdfunded sites, and I know that they're becoming very very well visited, and that the BBC and various other outlets have done pieces on them because it's very serious. So we're going to come back and we're going to talk about crowdfunding and Jessica Weiss's projects that it will be based here in Colombia and how we can help her out. So this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Don't go away.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
You've got questions about Colombia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Colombia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house? Find a job? Find a doctor? Start a business? Invest in real estate? What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Colombia? You'll find your answers at colombia.escapeartist.com, your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's colombia.escapeartist.com.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. And as you know, we have Jessica Weiss, a journalist from Washington, D.C., here in the studio with us. here with us, chatting about her future project. We'll have a project that she's looking for help with. It's a crowdfunded project on a page called The Beacon Reader. And that website is beaconreader.com. Now, tell us about this project. Tell us about the crowdfunding. Tell us about everything.
Okay, great. So Beacon Reader is a relatively new platform that was started by some really innovative thinkers, some really cool people, including one of the former managing editors at Facebook. And the idea behind it is to fund independent journalism, to get independent journalists who are looking to report on untold stories or on stories that wouldn't otherwise necessarily have a place or a voice, to get those out there. And the idea is to call upon the crowd. So, you know, anyone from friends and family to strangers to NGO workers to people just interested, passionate about the topic can follow a specific journalist and follow their reporting. So Beacon contacted me with an interest in having something from Colombia on the site. They're currently in a phase of raising money for a world affairs sort of trend or theme on the site. And so I'm proposing for the next 6 months to do a reporting project focusing on displacement in Colombia, on internally displaced people, IDPs in Colombia, of which there are many.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've done a piece, I did a piece years ago, I was looking back at it the other day, 2007, on internally displaced people. I did it for The Independent in the UK, and I went to Cali. I was here in Bogota and in Medellin. I went to the Red Cross offices. It was sort of commissioned by the Red Cross, International Red Cross, and it was unbelievable. And there was a set time where sort of internally displaced people could come up to certain offices in areas of these cities and make their claims, basically. Wow. You know, sit down and tell their story. So I was able to sit in. It was amongst one of the most harrowing jobs I've ever done. You know, people who really just want to get by. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, talking about the most humble people in Colombia, usually mm-hmm. a lot of Afro-Caribbeans. I mean, the Afro-Caribbean community and the Chocoano communities have been incredibly strafed by this. And so you're looking to travel around Colombia and interview and, I guess, you know, really get to grips with this issue, you know, from the ground level up. Huh?
Yeah, you know, I became sort of called to this issue because I've been, of course, following everything that's going on here in Colombia with, you know, the peace talks, sort of projections of what a post-conflict Colombia or a post-accord Colombia might look like. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a big topic here. And I was really struck, actually on Al Jazeera, on the stream about 2 months ago, I saw a statistic come up that said, since the peace talks began in 2012, 14,000 people have been displaced each month in Colombia. So that's in the midst of you know, what's being considered an unprecedented peace process. So it really got me thinking. That's a huge number of people, and we're not really hearing those stories or what life really looks like. And I think that for me, like probably for many people, I hear I hear the phrase internally displaced person, and it conjures up a certain idea for me. But I don't actually really know. You know, you were able to have that experience where you were talking to people. You know, I would like to understand better what that looks like, where these people go, what they do. Really, at the end of the day, these are stories about starting over. These are stories about innovation. These are stories about losing everything that you know and being forced to start over. And that sort of human story is what inspires me and what makes me feel that this is something that we can't just consider a statistic or a number or a phrase. We have to actually understand what's really happening.
14,000 people a month since November 2012 when the peace dialogues began. 14,000. I mean, I'm trying to put that into you know, a visual image of what's the reference of a 14,000 person or population town. You know, imagine that you're from some town with 14,000. It's a small town.
Yeah.
I mean, that's okay. So let's take my town, Mompos, you know, where I have the little hotel. That's roughly 40,000 people. So it's mm-hmm. that's 3 months worth of
yeah.
displacements, more or less, 40, 20, yeah, but a little bit more, but 3.5 months worth of displacements, and it would have not a soul in it.
Exactly.
Crazy, isn't it? It's crazy. And how many internally displaced people do you think, or other statistics, in Colombia as a whole?
So estimates put it at around 5.5 million people.
That's a Human Rights Watch figure as well, isn't it? Yeah, so
I think the government figures are slightly lower. There's been, you know, I think NGOs didn't start monitoring that issue until, you know, pretty deep into the conflict. So, the verdict is sort of is out on how many people the final figure is, but it's certainly into the 5 millions, which is, it's a huge percentage of the population of this country that's really recently been forced to create new lives, new places and new surroundings.
And you've got a huge population of that. Let's say an original or aboriginal Colombian population, the indigenous tribes, the Chimuembera, the Catuembera, from up near the border of Panama, up into the Urabá, these areas, who up until recently were living in the warehouses that used to store coffee and sugar at the Estación de la Sabana in central Bogota. Huh. So these old warehouses that still had the sort of railway tracks in them were makeshift homes for over a year for basically whole communities of indigenous Embera people from Antioquia. And the big problem was tuberculosis as well. But so coming into cities where they were just not adapted.
Right.
You know, these people are not. Okay, their biological makeup is not made for this. And so, I don't know. I did a piece, again, years ago for the BBC on the Nukakmaku in Guaviare. And that was another issue because it was the Guayaberos and the Nukakmaku were all being driven off their land for cocoa growing. And fumigations was then the next problem. And then we were on the next wave of agricultural exploitation. It was African palm.
Mm-hmm.
And in that area, it's rife. I wonder how you're going to find time to, let's say, minimize the project.
Right. Yeah, and that brings up another issue, which is, you know, the conflict has displaced people, but also natural disasters, mining now, a lot of mining. So, Yeah, there's obviously so many stories to tell, literally millions of stories to tell. And so the idea behind my project is to share some of those, as many as I can. As you know, I know that the topic is sensitive. My idea is to find people who are willing to share their stories with me, but also not just about, you know, the suffering, although that is a part of it, but also about the experience of starting over, you know, perhaps something that's helping someone heal, thrive, a new project, a new innovative sort of solution to this huge problem. So I'm looking at the issue from all angles, and I'm interested just in hearing the diversity of experiences.
It's a tough one, though. I mean, it's going to be tough. I think, you know, and will you be working alongside NGOs, or are you going to go it alone?
Hopefully, yeah. I've already got sort of my feelers out for NGOs and experts working on this issue. I've been, a few months ago, I went with an NGO called Project Art Sin Fronteras, which is a French-funded NGO that's working here in a lot of the communities where displaced people have arrived. So I went to San Cristobal Sur, and to a sort of a neighborhood in there called Santa Rosa, which is made up almost exclusively of displaced people. Was really, really fascinated by what's going on there. It made what you were just saying really made me think of something that I saw when I was there, which is that people have taken over these constructions, these sort of abandoned houses that have been deemed uninhabitable by architects, by the government, that are at any moment could, you know, they're basically on the side of a mountain in a very, you know, humid zone with a lot of water everywhere. And so it's really unsafe. These people are, you know, they're not paying rent to live in these places, but they're also putting their lives at risk. And so it just goes to show a lot of them don't have electricity, running water. But then alongside that, through the NGO, I was able to hear stories of people that are, you know, planting urban gardens, that are taking photography courses, that are, you know, learning how to sew and to do crafts and to sell things in the city and to adapt their lives to living here in Bogota. So that was also very fascinating and inspiring.
Very interesting indeed, and especially that sort of latter part of your statement there. Very interesting. I never really thought about that side of things. We're going to take another short break. We're talking with Jessica Weiss, who will be doing a project for the Beacon Reader about internally displaced people here in Colombia. And you can get involved. We'll tell you how in the next segment of the show. You're listening to Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Don't go away.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Have you ever thought about what it might be like to live in a quaint little fishing village in Baja? Starting Friday, September 5th, tune in to Todos Santos Weekend with Wendy for a real taste of what life is like on the Tropic of Cancer in the Pueblo Mágico, Todos Santos, only 50 miles north of Cabo San Lucas, but worlds away in every way. I'm Wendy Raines, and I love sharing all the stories, adventures, and special people of our magic town. Come join me every Friday at 11 a.m. for a taste of the magic of living the Baja good life.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here in Bogota with Jessica Weiss, and we're talking about her crowdfunded project, to be crowdfunded project, because it's a project on this platform called the Beacon Reader, in which you can look up at beaconreader.com, just as you would imagine it spelled. Anyway, you know, it's a crowdfunding project. She's going to go out. It's going to be a six-month project, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. It's a six-month project, and it needs to be funded by August 31st. The final goal is over $4,000, just a little bit over $4,000. She's well on the way, but we're coming into the final few days here. So listen, get involved, because these are stories, these are human interest stories that don't get out there, and they need to be told. So, I mean, you know, the Beacon Reader, do we know how many sort of what kind of readership they have? What kind of people are out there, you know, signing up? Because you get on board as like a subscriber, don't you?
Right. So you can get involved. You know, there's subscriptions for as little as $5 a month. Mm-hmm. So So really, you have a lot of options. You can, of course, give more if you want to support a project. But right now, the platform's pretty new. They started late last year, I believe. And there's 100 writers that have been sort of funded and have ongoing projects on the site. And writers have different followings. So they had some, choose to just do the project with very little backing, sort of as a passion project for, maybe just a small number of readers, and others are looking for, upwards of hundreds of readers to mm-hmm. follow. And the idea really is to create a community around the topic. So what I'm interested in doing is interacting with my readers, understanding what parts of what I'm reporting on they're most interested in, and inviting in questions and sort of dialogue and commentary on the things that I'm writing. And I'm also planning on writing a diversity of things, not just, the normal news story you're used to reading, the feature story, which of course I love writing and will do, but also Q&As, discussion questions, multimedia. I want to put pictures, audio. So I want to make this a comprehensive sort of experience for the subscriber so that they can come to the project and feel like they're learning about this issue from multiple angles. Not just sort of a journalist sharing a news story with a reader, but more of a community type feel.
The Beacon Reader, it seems like a really nice platform. We mm-hmm. had a former interviewee on the show, on Columbia Calling, some months back. Some of you may remember, some of you may know, Wesley Tomaselli, and he's got the Bacata Diary. So he does mm-hmm. sort of studies, like much very, very interesting human interest stories. I believe he's done about graffiti, musicians, poets. Mm-hmm. At the moment, he's up on the coast collecting. So were I actually have subscribed, just so you know. So I've got, I'm paying my $5 a month, which it doesn't seem to me like a lot of money for, high quality journalism, because it's not just anyone who'd go on there. Right. Not just anyone who can write. The Beacon Reader are looking for qualified writers, people who can tell a story, inform, and of course put it together, that people are going to want to come back and read, because it's a product. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I think it's a fantastic idea. Now, you know a little bit more about this crowdfunding uh-huh. sort of platform. Tell us a little bit more about, the market, the crowdfunding market out there, because I'm sure this is of interest to readers.
Yeah, so a lot of, probably not telling a lot of listeners anything new here, but journalism is undergoing some major shifts and changes. Just 20 years ago, if you think about what a journalist did, a journalist was a gatekeeper, probably worked for a newspaper, a radio station, or a TV, channel, and was able to have an audience that it provided news to. Now what's happened, everybody's sharing news and information and stories all day through multiple channels. So the role of the journalist, has really shifted. And what's happened with that is that newsrooms are cutting positions for journalists. News isn't paying journalists as well anymore. But the problem with that is that people still crave stories. People still crave quality storytelling and journalism. And so how are we going to provide that for people and meet that demand when the market isn't really allowing us to get paid for doing that anymore? And so crowdfunding is a way to sort of start to fill a little bit of that gap. Obviously, there's a million sort of interesting, innovative things that are going on in journalism to get the field up to speed with the changes in technology. But crowdfunding is a way for journalists to connect directly with readers. And through these platforms that are, like you said, really impressive platforms, really well put together, visually appealing, easy to access information and news and pictures and stories. And to use these platforms as a way to connect that great storytelling with people that are still craving it. Kickstarter, I think Kickstarter's been around since 2009, has had a little bit of issue getting journalism projects funded, but recently created a new category specifically for journalism projects to bring a new light to journalism and how important it is. And there's a lot of these platforms being born to sort of answer this call for good information.
Of course, some will disappear and others will take hold, like in anything.
I mean,
so it's just up to you if you're a writer or a journalist or, you know, to pick the right one.
But
obviously find the one which works best for you.
And, yeah, Beacon sticks out to me because there's a lot of really smart people behind it who have been involved in the journalism world in various sort of ways for a long time, and who've seen these changes and who are really trying to, really in a smart way, to create a solution.
I think it's fantastic that there's something out there, because I, for one, get infuriated by brief pieces of news. I just don't like it. The brevity on these things. No, and there needs to be more explanation behind something. Not just, you know, let's say a bomb exploded somewhere. But why was the bomb put there? And what's the history behind it? And, you know, I think there's... as everybody gets master's now degrees nowadays and diplomas and various things, there is a craving for this knowledge, and yet, unfortunately, with the media and the way it is, you know, the regular newspaper just can't keep up anymore.
Right.
I mean, that's the truth. It's we all know that it's advertorially led. We all know that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. That's why, for example, newspapers have a driving section, because it's one of the money spinners that, you know, keeps them in business. But you know, I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough world out there.
And along with that sort of that deeper inquiry that you just mentioned and that why, I mean, I'm a learner too. I'm here in Colombia. I've been here for 6 months. I am not claiming to be an expert on any of these issues. What I am claiming is to be passionate and inspired by these stories and to want to be discovering alongside, you know, my readers and to take their questions and integrate them into my own sort of search for these answers and this knowledge. I am not by any means a longtime Columbia expert, but my job is to go synthesize the information that's out there from the experts, but also find the human stories to sort of supplement that inquiry.
I think it's very important that, because not like some of us who have been here a little while, who are jaded, have seen it all. But yeah, you get to look at it through a different, you're looking at it through a different set of eyes. It's fresh for you. I think that's very important, I think. And of course, you're not looking at it from the academic side of things, like they're saying, from a policymaker in the government or an NGO. You're looking at it as a description, as an observation. I think your words there will inspire some people to sign up to the Beacon Reader.
So
remember, folks, she's looking for just over $4,000. She's well on her way, but she needs a final push. Now, if you want to see more of Jessica's writing, look up her own website. That's Jessica Lee, L-E-E, Weiss. And that's Weiss. So it's jessicaleeweiss.com. Obviously, on my page and the Facebook page, all the links are up there. So you can just click through that way if my accent is just too much or I'm mumbling, which is, what I do. But anyway, so it's important. It's important that these stories get told. It's important. And, you know, and I believe in supporting people. We've had a few people on the show that have projects, some of which have been successful and some of which not. But we're here to help one another. And Colombia needs press. Colombia needs press from all sides. But, I mean, you know, only a few weeks ago, we had Colin Post on the show talking about his Kickstarter project, so another crowdfunded project, which was stuck for about half a month. It was a 30-day project, I believe. It was you'll remember, it's called This Mixed Life, and it's a story of addiction and sort of contraband from Dublin to Bogota. But for about half a month, it was stuck at about the $1,000 mark. He only wanted, I think it was $4,400, something like that. But in the final few days, that's when all the pledges came tumbling in.
Good to hear.
You know, so don't stress over it. Don't stress. We don't want to succumb. When it's all a success, and in 6 months' time you finish and you're being lauded about as the next big thing or whatever, we'll get you back on the show, and I don't want to see any gray hairs in your temple, neither from the stress of having trying to find the people to fund your project, nor from the stress of having heard these stories and listened to the stories. We know that we're going to get good news stories out of this too from you. This is what you're trying to tell us, and I think that's very important. You know, there is something else, and there are people out there making an effort to, you know, really, really push things forward. So mm-hmm. this is positive. So we're talking to Jessica Wise, who's a journalist from Washington, D.C. We've been talking to her about her Beacon Project and crowdfunding. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and talk further about this project, the Beacon, where she's going to travel, what she hopes to find, and so on. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard Mitchell. Don't go away.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
Tired of paying for traditional advertising? Sick of pouring money into SEO and questionable marketing firms? Looking to reach a new audience? We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. No radio experience or technical ability? No problem. In 3 easy steps, you'll be on your way to having a professional-sounding podcast and an exciting new platform to promote your business. Podfly's top-class support team guides you through the process to make podcasting easy, fun, and most important, have you sound your best. Get started today at podfly.net and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
From China's Great Wall to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, this is the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. This is the final segment of the show. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here with Jessica Wise, and we're a journalist from Washington, D.C. We've had a really interesting discussion about the nature of crowdfunding and journalism, how journalism is going, and of course her project for the Beacon Reader. So that's the beaconreader.com. You should look it up. Sponsor this this young lady in her quest to write a 6-month project about internally displaced people here in Colombia. Not just the bad news stories, there will be some good news stories in there too. So it's going to be a really interesting take on a terrible situation in Colombia. And I think we should sort of let's wind back a little bit and put Colombia into the context of, into a world context about internally displaced people. Jessica, you're better placed than me because you're about to launch on this project. But I mean, how does Colombia's internally displaced people's problem, that's an alliteration there, how does it compare to the rest of the world, you know, alongside other countries?
It is definitely one of the worst in the world. Syria last year in 2013 surpassed Colombia in the number of internally displaced people, of course, because of the conflict there. But prior, in the years prior, Colombia was the country with the largest population of internally displaced people in the world. So this is one of the top countries, basically, mm-hmm. with the Congo, Nigeria, Syria. So in terms of, and of course in Latin America.
Well, I have this image as well, and I'm sure many of us and the listeners out there has this image. It's sort of an image of, you know, the people fleeing the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda, isn't it? Is it Uganda? Mm-hmm. Where running at night with whatever that they can carry. Is that the sort of situation that we have here in Colombia?
I'm not 100% sure about. I think that yes, to some degree, that there have been situations, especially, I think last year, I'm going to get this wrong, but there were 10 mass displacements. So yes, where people are forced to flee in groups. I would imagine that a lot of that would happen sort of under the radar at night. And, you know, these different groups, whatever their motive is to take control of the land, they're just using terror to force people out. And so I'm being snuggled by a dog.
That's normal.
And the terror forces people to flee, to leave behind everything that they have and that they know, and to just get to a safer place, even if it's a place with miserable conditions, you know, whatever it is on the side of a mountain or in, you know, mosquito infested without running water, whatever it is, just to get to a place that's safe.
And of course, it's not just a sort of active displacement as well as it's sort of kind of long-term displacement projects from the various different warring groups here in the conflict. Mm-hmm. So we've got the FARC, we have the ELN, a small faction of the EPL still remains there in Norte Santander, but it's also the paramilitaries and their offshoots, the Urabeños, which are now known as BACRIM, sort of newly emerged armed groups, the Rastrojos. I forget all the other names. There's a bunch of them, but they're all some independent. And of course, you know, they play the long term sort of projects that some of them have is, you know, placing landmines around water sources. So of course, the town has to leave.
Right.
You know, it's terrible. But I mean, you know, so I wanted to ask you a question about that because there are so many different sort of interests in Colombia, and you know, the multinationals, the big mining firms, and the big cultivations, and then of course the coca cultivations. But we've got these interests. Will you be not only interviewing, let's say, people affected by the violence, but also people like, you know, sort of reinsertados, so people reinserted into society, demobilized guerrillas, demobilized paramilitaries?
Yes, absolutely. I think because a lot of this displacement has happened from rural areas to cities, I think cities or places with a little bit more sort of urban density or these are places where a lot of different people are being forced to come together. People who are sort of victims of the violence, who have been you know displaced. And then as well, like you said, former fighters who are now, you know, coming to the cities for better opportunity, for safety, to put down their weapons. And so we're seeing sort of in even, you know, here in Bogota, there in the south especially, there's microcosms of urban settings where a lot of different people are being forced to come together and restart their lives. So I think that taking this issue from all the people that have been forced to sort of, you know, leave their past and come to a new future, whether that's, like you said, a former fighter being reinserted into society or whatever it is, I think that all of those perspectives are part of this larger issue and are really important to explore.
One of my concerns about the sort of the reinsertion process and projects is that, or not really, well, or let's say, you know, sort of rehoming people, let's say, former paramilitaries or former or demobilized FARC members, is they end up being put in, you know, their own little community. Mm-hmm. There's no sort of, I don't know if there's a chance for reconciliation or sort of, you know, reestablishing a sort of social, you know, socially acceptable community. You know, so you've got one side of the hill in Suacha, it's definitely all ex-paramilitary, and the other side of a hill, you've got all ex-FARC. I mean, this doesn't help that there are these islands of sort of political, you know, isolation. I don't know. It's very interesting.
Totally agree, and I think that this is part of, it's going to be such an interesting part of the future, you know, of this country, to not to be cliche, but to see, you know, how, whether people share their stories, what people are interested in terms of becoming part of the community, in terms of new opportunities for new generations, in terms of just the, you know, charting the future. How are people going to coexist in this society, and how are we going to move forward in a positive way? So
It's a tough one. It's a tough one, but you're going to get that. And I mean, I'm presuming you're not going to make this entirely an urban project, you know, on your Beacon Reader project. You're going to get out there into the countryside too.
Yeah, that's,
have you got places in mind?
That's my hope. You know, seeing if the project's funded, I really hope I'd like to get to Chocó, although I know it's hard to get there, but 40% of the population of Chocó has been displaced since 1997. That is a huge percentage of the population. It's basically reimagining a whole society, a whole, you know, that's in the northwest part of Colombia. So what does that look like? So that would be, you know, a place that I'd like to travel. I'd like to get, you know, to some of these places in Antioquia, near Medellin. So yeah, that's my hope, not just to stay here, obviously, in Bogota and just in the cities, but to see what life really looks like.
To get out to the Chocó would be incredibly illustrative and of course, eye-opening. It's the most phenomenal department. It's, in terms of biodiversity and warm, wonderful people, it's the Pacific coast and the people there, let's say the African communities, are direct descendants of former African slaves. Mm-hmm. They have not mixed, and so they're different. You can see a different, genealogical makeup from, let's say, the Caribbean coast. It's really fascinating, and if you get out to the coastline itself, it's a place where the jungles tumble into the ocean. It's just, the nature is out of this world. Mm-hmm. But I mean, one of my recommendations would be to get to the departmental capital of Quibdó, which is, you know, it's not an architectural masterpiece. It's nothing really to write home about. But that is, you know, an epicenter of displacement. And then if you were there and you made some good contacts, you could probably then get out to a nearby town of Ismina and other places and really see these things at ground level. It would be fascinating. It would be, and this is why she needs funding, folks, you know, because these flights out to this part of the world are not cheap. So there's only like one flight a day to Quibdó, and you know, honestly, $4,000 is not a lot to ask. Get out there, get onto the Beacon Reader, and you know, fund Jessica Weiss in her project. These are stories that need to be told. So, I mean, if you were going to sort of Antioquia, which again has been strafed, especially northern Antioquia, and Córdoba, which is still in the hands of various different groups, these areas. I don't know. I mean, there's a big project by the government to sort of, let's say, land restitution, land, you know, giving back their original land to the people who have been pushed off, that have been displaced. I don't know how they're going to do that. Yeah. I mean, it hasn't been so far a success since it was launched, I guess, almost 2 years ago by President Santos. People are afraid to go back.
Yeah.
And the alternative authorities, as I shall delicately put it, who pushed them off these lands, are still there.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I'm going to ask of you to tread very carefully.
Yes, I will.
You know, we don't want you as a statistic, and I don't want to be lamenting something here on the show in future months. But I think you're going to really get under the, you know, you're getting well below the surface of Colombia here. I you're going to learn a lot.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I'm interested in. Like you said, the government has a really ambitious plan. I was reading that the goal in 10 years is for 360,000 families to return, you know, to get land reparations. And so, what does that story look like? And on your second point about my safety, I'm interested in taking all safety precautions. I'm not a risk taker. You know, I'm looking for a responsible way to share these stories, and to not to put my life in danger in any way. So.
Yeah, and now next week, the week after this show, we'll be having a security expert on talking about travel safety. In fact, a security expert.
Oh, great!
I can't mention the company for which she works, but one of those proper outfits that do hostage negotiations and everything. So, well, I could put you in touch just in case you needed his number. But I think it's going to be phenomenal. And I think if you manage to get up into northern Antioquia, places like Zaragoza, I think you'll see a different Colombia altogether. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all kind of in our bubble here in Bogota. There's nice Juan Valdez nearby. You know, you can get a Corrientazo. You don't need to worry about where your next meal's coming from. But you go out into these places, and it's a different reality. I think you've gotten your favor. And it's not being a typical sort of, let's say, Colombian sexist, but I think being a young lady, you know, sympathetic, I think people will be very, especially sort of like mothers, heads of family, will be very sympathetic to telling their story. You know, perhaps you can associate or relate. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you've taken some of these things into account.
Yeah. I mean, obviously my experience is in no way anywhere close, but there's something, you know, inside of me. I'm not living in my country. I'm sort of an outsider here, and I'm learning a lot of things and trying new things and meeting people and facing all the obstacles that come with that. And so in my, you know, small way, I this is my experience as a person as a journalist. And so although I cannot relate to the experience of being displaced by violence, it's something that I feel associated with or drawn to, especially, women's stories. It's not an easy life. And how do you live day to day? How do you get up and get food on the table, feed your kids, try to get education, try to get work? Simple life questions. These are the questions that we're all exploring every day. And so that's my goal as a journalist, is to be sympathetic, is to be a good listener and to ask questions. And that's where I'm going with this project.
I think it's fantastic. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. I'm going to give you another plug here as we wind down. But listen, it's a crowdfunded site. If this story does not reach, if her project does not reach the desired amount of just over $4,000, it will not happen.
Yeah.
There's a truth to it. So please get onto www.beaconreader.com and look it up. It's there on the homepage, projects that need to be funded. Get in there, get involved. There's just a few days left. We'll give it this big push. You get a good support from Columbia Calling, because I saw some of the listeners were involved in supporting the Kickstarter project that Colin Post advertised, promoted on this show. So I know some of you are out there, and I know some of you are interested in these stories. Otherwise, you can see Jessica's writing at jessicaleeweiss.com. That's her website. This has been Columbia Calling. I've been Richard McColl talking to Jessica Weiss. Get in touch with us through columbiacalling@gmail.com. Look up the website, columbiacallingradio.com. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for coming on. And we hope in 6 months' time, when the project's done, we can have you back on.
Thank you so much for inviting me and for the support. And I look forward to that next chat.
All right. Thank you. And we signed out.
This podcast was produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great sounding podcasts.